everybody, Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff, half an hour of comedy that airs every Friday night here on KCRW. And tonight's show is a very special one. It's a visit with two very lovely people, but before I introduce you to them, I will let you hear a brief snippet of their work in a rare live appearance before the New England Animation Festival.
Well, it seems that our heroes are leaping from the frying pan into the fire, for they actually are returning to the Bleakley Mansion hideout of the dreadful 6-foot metal-munching mechanical mice.
Do we have to go back, Brock?
Duty's calling us, Bullwinkle.
I'm a little hard of hearing myself.
But remember what the big cheese said? They're going to take over the whole country.
Lock, stock, and Hawaii?
Yep.
Well, I guess we got to go back, all right.
Hey, let's sneak in very quietly.
But all of their caution was to no avail, for at that moment, high on the roof, the Big Cheese, alias Boris Badenoff, had already spotted them.
Natasha, we got guests. Let us give them the old-fashioned Badenoff welcome, huh?
How's that, darling?
The throw flowers.
Throw flowers?
Still in pots, of course.
And the scurvy sneak hurled a large urn down at our friends. Fortunately, the quick-witted squirrel saw it coming.
Bullwinkle! There's a great big flower pot coming right down at your... head.
You're a fast thinker, Rock, but you're kind of a slow talker.
However, since the flower pot had struck Bullwinkle squarely on the head, little damage had been done.
Well, this for the first time in KCRW history, we've actually had to rent microphones because we didn't have enough microphones or even barely enough space in the studio to hold all of the people that are in here. I suppose I should go around the room and introduce them one by one. First of all, there's Marigold.
Well, hello there.
And Tom Slick.
Greetings there, people.
George of the Jungle.
George, here too, swing from tree.
Oh! A Super Chicken.
Well, I'm certainly glad you mentioned me, if not first, at least.
Nell Fenwick.
Oh, Dudley, he must be here, too, with a horse.
And he is. Hello, Dudley.
Dudley, to right of the Mounties here. The only Mountie ever to arrest a redwood tree. For loitering.
Mr. Peabody?
Yes, of course. He is an oaf, isn't he, that Dudley?
And Natasha Fatal?
Always glad to be here. Not glad to be here. Sad to be here.
Rocky the Flying Squirrel?
Hokey Smoke, me too. I'm where Bullwinkle is.
And the one and only Bullwinkle Moose.
Or as he is sometimes known, absolutely befuddled.
Otherwise known as the collective voices of June Foray and Bill Scott. Welcome to KCRW, guys.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here, Bob.
Well, you want me to speak in my own voice? This is it, kiddo.
Well, we're here partially to celebrate the fact that Rocky and Bullwinkle are back on the air, at least here in Los Angeles.
Let's hear it, folks.
How did Rocky and Bullwinkle get started?
Well, Bill can answer that one.
They actually started as two supporting characters on somebody else's show. When Jay originally did Crusader Rabbit.
Jay Ward
did Crusader Rabbit with a partner named Alex Anderson. Brilliant writer, wonderful artist. And they tried to get a series to follow up Crusader Rabbit. The networks and stations and all the powers that be knew that this was never going to work on television at all, so they didn't buy any of the...
Were you involved with Crusader Rabbit?
No. I came in very late in the game. I came in 1958. Crusader Rabbit was about 10 years earlier than that. But one of the series that Jay and Alex Anderson dreamed up was a series called The Frostbite Falls Follies. And it was about the adventures of a bunch of animals who have a television station in the North Woods. Two of the supporting characters in this were a moose and a squirrel. And Jay fell in love with the moose and the squirrel, I suppose, because they were very much like the rabbit and the tiger in Crusader Rabbit. So we were together on another project, and he asked me about a year later if I thought I could write an adventure strip with a moose and a squirrel. Never having written one, I said, of course we can write an adventure strip with a moose and a squirrel.
A flying squirrel, no less. And that's where you came into the story, June. You were hired to do the voice of the squirrel.
My agent called me one day and said, have you ever heard of a Jay Ward? I had never even heard of Crusader Rabbit, frankly. But anyway,
he said, darling, he wants to take you to lunch.
So I said, well, what does he want besides that? He said, well, he's got an idea for a show, and he'd like to take you to lunch. And here is an actress who all her life has had to voice test for everything, you know. Mm-hmm. But I was pretty active then at doing all the Warner Brothers films and the Disney films and the MGM films. And so Jay had heard about me and I guess recognized my, quote, talent or whatever. And so I went to lunch with him, and that was in 1958. And we did, you wrote the segment, didn't you, Bill?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I had never met Bill before, and I had worked at UPA, and I had worked at Warner Brothers. So we all got together, Paul Frees and Bill Scott and I, and we did the pilot. And I forgot about it. And then a year later, my agent called and said, hey, remember Jay Ward? And I said, oh, yeah. He's the guy I had martinis with at lunch. He said, well, he's ready to go. And that's how it all started with me. Yeah.
And, of course, you're still active in cartoons today. Sure.
I'm Jokey Smurf on The Smurfs. I'm Aunt May in Spider-Man. I was steady on Heathcliff. And I've got a special coming out with Alvin and the Chipmunks in April or May. Mm. So I'm...
Is there an animal you haven't done?
I don't know. There must be. I've done them all. I've even done an aardvark.
What does an aardvark sound like?
It was something like a Jokey Smurf type thing. I've done kangaroos.
It's a standard aardvark. You know.
Yeah.
Between you and Mel Blanc, you've got everything. Have you worked with Mel Blanc? You must have somewhere along the line.
Oh, my God, I did about 65 Warner Brothers cartoons.
Oh, that's right. Just one sort of technical question that I've always wondered about. When you played more than one voice in a scene, did you have to do it all live in one take and keep switching back and forth between the voices? Or was
Isn't that
it
the way you always do it? Of course we do.
There's
it.
Another
sure.
way?
I never
except,
heard of it.
Neither did I.
Bill never marked his script, but I did, because Rocky and Natasha, and I'm nearsighted. I was always off mic because I'm nearsighted, and I'd be reading like this, you know, with my script in front of my face. But anyway, I always marked Natasha red because she was, you know, from communist country.
Of
or
course.
Something. And Rocky, of course, was just plain pencil. All the others were different colored ink, but I always had to have Rocky and Natasha, so when we did go through it real fast, I could glance at it and know that Natasha was my next speech.
I always felt that marking my script was a kind of cheating.
How much ad-libbing was there?
None.
Minimal ad-libbing. We had all our ad-libbing out of the way when we did the rehearsal. If something was good ad-lib, we stuck it into the script, but there were very few ad-libs done during scripts, because usually if there was an ad-lib, it was so dirty or it was so funny that we broke up anyway.
Are there Rocky and Bullwinkle bloopers? That'd be great to hear.
There is such a reel around, I understand.
Yes.
Primarily it's June and I laughing at Bill Conrad and Paul Frees, who had a kind of a going feud.
Now that's something a lot of people don't realize, is that William Conrad, the detective, what's the name of the detective?
Frank Cannon.
Who played Cannon on television, was the narrator.
Yeah, and Nero Wolfe. And all of these characters are fairly slow-talking, steady. He gets onto this in this series, and Jay kept having him go faster and faster and faster, and his voice kept getting higher and higher and higher. And finally said to Jay at one rehearsal, Jay, if I talk any faster, I'm going to sound hysterical. And Jay said, that's it. That's what I want.
Well, who wrote these shows? It's because they were shows which were obviously intended for children and were very successful for children as intended, but they also seemed to be written by clever, intelligent people who were also out to make themselves laugh. And there was nothing condescending about them, and I think that's the one thing you see in so much children's television today is the condescending attitude toward what the kids are going to enjoy and what the kids will understand. And there's so many jokes that you see the Rocky and Bullwinkle shows today, and you wonder, you know, how did we understand these when we were children?
You didn't.
And, no, we didn't. But there was enough other other things going on that we did understand.
Sure.
So, first of all, who wrote these things? What sort of people wrote them?
I wrote about 2/3 of all the Rocky and Bullwinkle episodes. That was my primary function on the show. I also was head writer for everything else that came over the desk to be done. But we had some powerhouses for writers. We had Alan Burns, who went on to write the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and Lou Grant. We had,
Chris Hayward, who wrote Barney Miller, and Lloyd Turner, who wrote The Jeffersons, and Chris Jenkins, and George Atkins.
George Atkins, very big with the game show people, and They all went on to do very big things in television. Only June and I stayed with and Dawes Butler stayed with the mighty J. Ward Art Players.
Now, did you get into any trouble with any of these scripts? Because, I mean, I know in some cases you mentioned real people.
There was a lovely thing about that, and that was the fact that we were always so late in delivering shows that nobody could say anything about anything. Literally, there were times when our editor would be waiting at the laboratory at General for our print to come out, and he would grab it, stick it into the back of his old battered Datsun, and pedal it over to the network and deliver it to the people for broadcast on the air about 3 hours from then. it was that close. So any time that we got any comment from the sponsor or from the network about a show, about a script that was being done, then they look at something like, God, you can't do this. Jay would always say, fine, do you want the correction or do you want this week's show? They always decided, well, don't let it happen again. But a lot of pressure was taken off us because we were running so close to deadline. There was one occasion on which we were taken to task because we had used a standard, what I thought was a standard cartoon ploy. Rocky and Bullwinkle are captured by natives and they are put into a pot, right? The fire is lit under them and the network screamed bloody murder. And they said, you can't. No cannibalism on children's shows. Jay fired off a letter asking for a philosophical decision on whether it was cannibalism to eat a moose and a squirrel.
That's great.
Oh, there's another.
And how was it resolved?
Well, we were so close to air.
In the pot.
Excuse me.
The next thing they objected to was the natives themselves. They said, you can't do this, you know. The NAACP is going to get after us. So from that point on, all of our natives were always white. We had the whitest natives. They all had funny costumes on. They all talked crazy, but they were all white.
And speaking of natives, Bill Conrad kept saying, I can double. Why don't you ever let me double?
I can do voices. I can do voices as well as any of these bastards.
Because he was way up here when he talked. And, you know, he wanted to use his own voice. So Bill obviously wrote a line just for Bill Conrad. Sam the Native. What did he say? Ug me go.
He's a minor supporting character, right?
And it was not good. So he was never allowed to double again.
We had this one session, and of course, Freeze just ragged him unmercifully. He read the thing. He sounded just like Bill Conrad. Jay said, sounds like Bill Conrad, Bill. Can you change it a little bit? So he read it again. Now, can we try a little higher, maybe? And he read it again. And by this time, we're beginning to break up. Conrad is perspiring. He's going to get the goddamn money. He's going to get it. It kills him, man. At that point, Paul Freeze says, you know... Billy, why don't you try with a French accent? Hey, Conrad, it's getting sore. I think we finally did it. I don't know whether
yeah,
we actually
he
took the
he
tape.
Did. He
but
did.
He must have done the tape, must have done that particular episode, that line, at least 25 times.
And of course, they were ragging him, too.
Yeah, and the people in the booth are falling down, and we're going hysterical, and Conrad is determined he's going to get something he can use on the air. The next day, Jay, through our publicity man, planted an article in the trades that said Scuttlebutt is that a major network is dickering with actor William Conrad for an animated series to be called Sam the Native. And Bill was getting all kinds of phone calls. Say, I hear you're Sam the Native. Gee, that's great.
Sam the Native. That's marvelous.
But you mentioned some of the people. And now, we did several episodes on the Kerwood Derby, and an announcer at that time was Durwood Kirby.
We got a letter from Durwood Kirby's attorney. You know, he said, Mr. Kirby feels that so-and-so, and you will cease and desist, or we will be forced to take legal action. Jay wrote back a letter and said, if Mr. Kirby will sue us, we will pay his attorney's fees.
That's wonderful.
We heard no more about it. When we got the great Klemke Diddlehopper story, at the time, in order to give the show topicality, because there's such a lag in animation, we used a hand puppet on network, live hand puppet.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing the hand puppet and the voice, and we got this letter from Red Skelton's attorney. And he said, Mr. Skelton feels that you have stolen his voice of Klemke Diddlehopper to use for Bullwinkle. You will see Cindy's sister, or we will take legal action. And that night, the puppet goes on the air, and he says, see, we get a letter in the mail today from Mr. Red Skelton. He said that my voice sounds like that of Klemke Diddlehopper. Now, to show you just how silly that is, I will now do my imitation of Klemke Diddlehopper. Hi there, this is Klemke Diddlehopper speaking. Now, you see how different... We didn't hear anything more.
So when these shows were first aired, there were also live segments?
Yes, yes. The puppet was live. And
is there any,
as a matter of fact,
any of that that's still
when we shifted extant? when we shifted from NBC to ABC, we had a special notation the puppets said. So as a parting gesture to NBC, we roasted their peacock. And we brought this scrawny dead bird on the air.
Now, the animation of Rocky and Bullwinkle is, well, it's not Disney-level animation. You can definitely...
You're being very kind and charitable.
I was trying.
Yes, that was the nicest thing you've said.
I was trying. What were the circumstances under which the shows were animated?
The first shows were all animated in Mexico. I knew nothing about this, as a matter of fact, until the day we were to sign the contracts. Jay had... was ill and could not make it to the meeting, and he hadn't clued me into a thing. And as we were walking across the parking lot to the meeting with the sponsor of the network and who else, the gentlemen who were instrumental in putting the show together bracketed me like two tame elephants and the rogue elephant, and they said, if you hear us say anything about Mexico, say we can do it. Yeah, all right, okay, sure. But the first question was, do you think you can really do this in Mexico? Why, certainly, I say. I had the faintest idea if we could do it in Mexico. And as it turned out, we couldn't. It just, yeah, it was so, you know, the talent was not there, the experience was not there. And from the first episode, Jay did his best to haul it back across the border. To finally, at the end of it, almost all the material was being done in this country.
You know, the animation on the original Bullwinkle show was... crude and primitive, but the scripts were so brilliant, mm-hmm. and the actors carry that brilliancy along so that you didn't mind the limited animation.
But it's funny. I mean, it is limited animation, but there's something awfully wonderful about it. In preparing for this, I have videotaped a number of the things from the Sunday mornings, and I was in the kitchen, so I couldn't see it, and I was listening to it, and you do miss a lot by not watching it. Then you come in and watch it, and there are wonderful little things like Bullwinkle lying in the bed and his feet dangling off, you know, 4 feet down the other end of the bed and things like that. There were some very funny things that were put in the animation. It's not realistic movement, but there are a lot of visual jokes that were put in there.
Oh, the gags were wonderful.
There was another one that showed Rocky and Bullwinkle sleeping together in the same bed, which is...
Oh, don't say that in front of it. Yeah. Oh, my. Terrible to suggest anything.
But there were wonderfully adult touches in there. There was one that I just saw in which they go to this Western town and somebody comes up and says, you aim it to stay, and Bullwinkle says he doesn't understand what he's saying, and Rocky says to Bullwinkle, no, he means, are we here for good? And Bullwinkle says, you know, none of us are here for good. We all have to go sometime. This wonderful moment of, you know, philosophical introspection in the middle of Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Where are any of us going wrong?
Because Boris wouldn't say we are going for good, we are going for bad, darling.
That's right.
Now, the show started out as The Rocky Show. No, after it left
Rocky
the Frostbite Fall. It was Rocky and His Friends. Then it became...
Then when we changed networks, it became The Bullwinkle Show.
Was there any ego involved in that decision?
No, it's the same show.
Just my metal. As Shakespeare found, in any given script or any given situation, the villains and the clowns always take over the act.
Uh-huh.
So, and we couldn't call it the Boris Badenov show, so we had to call it.
No, but it was wonderful. The Bullwinkle show. I love in the Bullwinkle's corner or the Mr. Know-It-Alls or something. When Boris and Natasha do cameos in that, it's really wonderful to see them in there. Yeah. So how many completely different half hours are there of
178
half
hours.
My goodness.
356 individual Bullwinkle and Rocky episodes.
Done over how many years?
About five.
We started in 59. I think we ended on the air in 59. We started in 58
mm-hmm. producing him.
You guys must have been busy.
Oh, yeah. At the latter part of it, we were doing that and also starting up with George of the Jungle and Fractured Flickers and all that stuff, too. Mm.
Do you think we'll ever see its like again?
I hoped so. I still hope so, I guess. I thought that when we did the Bullwinkle show that we were doing something which was going to lead the way to a different kind of humor, a different kind of use of animation. We apparently, except for Roger Ramjet, which I enjoyed very much, were kind of sui generis.
I'm amazed to see Roger Ramjet is something I've always thought I imagined, because no one that I've ever mentioned it to it shows any sign of recognition. And there was a record from Roger Ramjet that I've been desperately trying to find. If anybody out there has a copy of the Roger Ramjet record, I'd love a tape of it. You worked with a lot of other wonderful people. The first one that comes to mind is Hans Conried.
Besides being a wonderfully accomplished actor, he was a brilliant man. He was a knowledgeable man with art, with literature. He was extremely articulate and very arch. If he was in someone's company who probably had an IQ of less than 100, he could be scathing.
Savage. He did not suffer fools gladly.
No,
I've been watching him on the reruns they've been showing of the Tony Randall show, and he could get more out of a seemingly nothing line just in the way that he would just wrap his mouth around it. It was just wonderful.
I was used to his acting talent, and I was used to that. I'd heard him on radio, and I'd seen him in movies, and I'd worked with him. I knew what he could do and all. But he had a talent that I envied so much. He could go to sleep at will. And we thought that was, for anybody in motion pictures.
Oh,
we'd
be sitting around waiting. And
yes. We would, when we were doing Fractured Flickers, and he was the host of Fractured Flickers, we shot everything one day. We'd shoot, maybe we'd shoot two shows in one day, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, for as far as his bridges of the material was concerned. Very, very tiny, crowded commercial stage with lights being moved and cameras and so forth. And Hans would sit down in the middle of this in a director's chair, and he would compose himself, and his head would get down, and he'd be sound asleep. He would be, and this stuff would be going on all around.
The only other person I've ever heard of that could do that was JFK.
Oh.
I know he could do that. He used to take 10-minute naps in the White House like that.
And you go over and you touch him on the shoulder, and he'd go up like that, and he's fresh. No grogginess or anything like that.
Oh, that's amazing.
My own.
During radio, Hans used to wear one green sock and one red one. And he always wore a red scarf around his neck. I don't care how hot it was.
And when anybody would say, do you know you have one red sock and one green sock? And he would say, yes. And they say, isn't it unusual? And he said, not at all. I have another pair at home just like them.
Edward Everett Horton.
Splendid man.
Here was a man, well, if you can picture his face, when he laughed at the end of every episode, he would pinch his chin was getting smaller and smaller all the time as he got older, and he would purse his mouth and his chin would go in and go, and he was marvelous to behold. But this was a man who came from the stage and from pictures, and he would come in and pick up a script. He never received a script before, did he, Bill?
No.
He would come into the studio, pick that script up. We'd go through it once during rehearsal for timing, and now there it would be.
He was well over 80, and as June said, he almost weekly became more wrinkled, began to look like one of those crabapple dolls after a while, with all the features slowly fading in upon themselves. I asked him, Everett, what do you think is the reason?
Everyone called him Edward Everett?
Oh, yes, he wanted to be called, Edward Everett. Everett, just remarkable, you're being as active and cogent as you are at these as advanced years. What's the reason for it? He said, well, Bill, I can only tell you this. Do you know where I'm going after tonight's show? And I said, no, where are you going? He said, I'm going to my mother's birthday party.
It was true. 102.
It was true. Oh, she was over 100 years old.
He came into the studio once. It was a very cold night. And he had on a sweater that a polar bear, it looked like a polar bear, a great big heavy
big
sweater.
Big Dover with a sweater. Big
cowl Stover, neck. Yeah. And I said, Edward Everett, that's a beautiful sweater. Now, as Bill said, he was over 80. I said, is it new? He said, oh, my, no. He said, this is my high school sweater. He was quite niggardly. But,
oh, that's wonderful. Amusing. For the Jay Ward, Rocky and Bullwinkle fans, after George of the Jungle, all that was done out of the Jay Ward studio were hundreds of Captain Crunch commercials.
We did, of course, we did Fractured Flickers. We also did some compilation films, Crazy World of Laurel and Hardy, the vintage W.C. Fields, those wonderful Benchley shorts and so forth, which had some animation in them, but were primarily just tributes to the older films.
But for 18 years, we've done the Cap'n Crunch commercials. They just changed production houses now. Maybe they're not even making Cap'n Crunch anymore. I don't know.
Residuals have dried up.
But we did those for 18 years, the whole family together.
One never knew where to find them, but they always looked wonderful when you'd see them with the most outrageous puns that you could imagine.
Oh. Well, Bill wrote them.
Well, they're marvelous. It'd be great to see, I don't know how many of those you could take in one sitting, but it'd be great to see some of those put together. Sure.
When we leave this... these hallowed halls, we're going to go to another session for an album by Joe Piscopo, and it concerns Joe Piscopo running into his old idols Rocky and Bullwinkle while performing in a Mexican bowling alley.
Oh, that sounds marvelous.
We're doing a lot of that. Most recently, I guess. I did a thing for Weird Al Yankovic, who is doing a new album, and he's doing the George of the Jungle theme as one of the cuts on it, and he wanted the authentic George of the Jungle cry. He called me, and I did a special session for Weird Al where I just yodeled, you know. That's what I did. That's pretty good to get scale for.
Is there any chance that there'll ever be more Rocky and Bullwinkle on our televisions at some point?
Seems very doubtful. That the thing that made that happen was a concatenation of circumstances and people that I think could happen only a few times. I don't know that we could put it together now. A lot of the people are no longer with us. A lot of the others have gone on to greater glories. But there are good writers out there, good young, bright writers. If they can get a producer like Jay, who has only three rules, it's got to be in English, it's got to be funny, and it has to be finished yesterday, and will support them and give them a lot of freedom to write, the talent is there. There'll be another one along. I hope that I'm here to see it.
Well, I hope we all are. And I thank you for subjecting yourselves to this.
This was an enormous amount of fun, Bob. I enjoyed it.
A lot of fun, Bob. Yeah. And thank you for inviting us.
And that's going to have to do it for this edition of Funny Stuff. My special thanks, of course, go to June Foray and Bill Scott, the nicest moose and squirrel I know. I think they were just wonderful and very generous with their time.